humanitarian workers, including the three British citizens that tragically were killed. We should also send our condolences to their families, and our thoughts should be with them. I welcome what the Israeli foreign minister said yesterday to me about a full, urgent and transparent inquiry into how this dreadful event was allowed to happen. And we want to see that happen very, very quickly. I also welcome the fact that he spoke about much more aid getting into Gaza, up to 500 trucks a day. That is essential. We've been promised these things before, and this really needs to happen, including longer opening times at the vital crossing points. But of course, the extra aid won't work unless there is proper deconfliction, unless aid can be taken around Gaza and we avoid the dreadful incidents like we've seen in the last couple of days. That is vital, and Britain will be watching very closely to make sure that that happens.
David Cameron there, the British Foreign Secretary. Dr. Abbas, Israel first deflected blame. Then it said what happened was a grave mistake. But how could that have been when the convoy, as you mentioned earlier, was clearly marked and the coordinates were already shared with the Israeli occupation forces?
The place where these convoy was struck, it was not a conflict zone, as everyone knows about it. See, today Israel is clearly losing the media war. You know, all these decades, they thought if they had control over the media, you know, if they had stooges doing what they say, you know, the people are dumb to believe them. But today, the power of citizen voice has taken over the entire information war. And today, every citizen, me sitting back in India, I know the facts, I know the truth. Because come on, you know, we're educated people. I do not believe any of these investigations, because there are thousands of crimes committed by Israel just in the last 5 months, let alone the last few decades. And when they say that we're going to do a high-level investigation, but what comes out? Nothing but propaganda. When Israel says it was unintentional, why are they not apologizing? And I am so ashamed. I'm so, you know, so ashamed about the United States stand that today John Kirby, the White House National Communication and Security Advisor, says that there is no evidence that Israel has violated international humanitarian law. Well, do they think we are dumb, deaf and blind? This is absolutely deplorable. And very recently, today, America is losing the support of the Muslims. Like just yesterday, the annual iftar was cancelled because none of the Muslims wanted to accept the invitation. This is just the beginning, because Israel is clearly losing their ground in this ongoing genocide. We have to term this as genocide. Where is International Court of Justice? Where is United Nations Security Council? Is Israel so powerful that they can, you know, insult the Security Council, vote on immediate ceasefire? I don't understand. If it was another country like Yemen or Libya, they would have been invaded by
absolutely
now.
Absolutely nothing happens. And I saw Alex Ackerman there shaking his head. Now, we've seen the knock-on effect of what happened to these seven aid workers. And we've had 196 other recognized aid workers, especially and primarily Palestinians, be killed before. But this has touched a chord. It's really raised the public consciousness the way in which it happened, for example. But we're seeing here that it's had a knock-on effect where other charities are saying, listen, we cannot guarantee the safety of our staff. So unfortunately, we have to pause activities at the moment. Wasn't this the aim in the first place, if you were a cynical man, Alex?
I mean, it's really difficult to see what is really happening now in this place. First of all, the convoy, a lot of convoys have been stopped to get into Gaza. And I think many politicians have criticized the fact that the Israeli government basically doesn't allow the convoy to get in as quick as possible, to allow food to get to the people and the medicine to get to people injured. Hospitals are completely run out of medicine.
That's if they're standing. Actually.
Now, on top of that, what is a bit cynical as well, you see that the Western countries like the US just allow more equipment, more arms to be sold to Israel. We also have three British citizens were killed. And I think today the Libdem leader was asking the government to stop selling arms to Israel. So you can see that for the last 6 months, these killings have been going on. And despite the talk between Americans, Foreign Secretary, and Israelis going down there mediating, things are not getting better. It's even getting worse. And America is feeding Israel with more arms and more equipment. As a result, Israel, even despite the UN call for a ceasefire, nothing is being happening.
At all. And had that ceasefire come into operation, Alex, so many lives would have been saved already, even though it's already gone as bad as it is.
Exactly.
We'll be getting back to that discussion after this, because many of us are aware that on the last Friday of Ramadan, the annual Quds Day commemorations take place across the globe, calling for solidarity with the people of Palestine, something that's needed more than ever. We spoke to Raza Barak Ali, pro-Palestinian activist, who reminded us that it was not solely an Iranian event.
The last Friday of Ramadan, I believe. So yeah, I think it's an opportunity for people to show support, you know, on this day, you know, for what's going on. The people of Palestine, opinion is changing, not just in the Islamic world. I think opinion is changing globally, where people are seeing, you know, what's going on in Palestine and Israel as not being, oh, it's just one side. I think they're recognizing that, you know, what's going on by the IDF, it is corrupt. And I think, you know, people who are sort of, you know, middle of the road are, you know, probably seeing things, well, not probably, they are seeing things differently, where in the past they, you know, wouldn't have an opinion either way. But, you know, now they're sort of seeing, you know, so they're probably sort of seeing that, you know, it's not an Iranian thing. It's not, again, my view is it's not an Iranian thing. Yeah, perhaps it started by the Iranians, but it's a Palestinian thing. It's a human thing now. And there have been protests every Saturday, every Sunday. There's always something going on. So in regards to, you know, our Quds Day, you know, if people are able to, you know, it's not a political movement. It's a human movement. We're showing support for the Palestinian people against, you know, what, you know, what is being done to them by the Zionists and Israelis. So now I think absolutely, if you're free on Friday and there's something local to you in your city, then go show support.
Demonstrations continued across the UK, with tens of thousands taken to the streets of the British capital over the past weekend to demand the government do more to stop the bloodshed in Gaza. Our cameras were, of course, on hand to get a selection and views on why they've attended the march and what was at stake.
Well, I just think what's happening in Palestine is really, really ridiculous. And the world is just standing and watching them kill so many thousands, so many, I don't know, children, men, women. It's just not right. The injustices in this world is just ridiculous. And we need to show this. We need to show the world that this is what it is like.
You can't win a war like this. Like the idea that you know the argument from Israel that you're going to destroy Hamas. Hamas is an organization, but it's an ideology, and there are reasons why it was formed in the first place. And even if you destroy Hamas, you've destroyed millions of lives.
We're still protesting, as you can tell, against the ongoing genocide taking place in Gaza. We're not going to let up until it comes to an end. Listen to the ordinary people who are against this inhumane and cruel war and genocide.
People shouldn't vote for leaders who have failed us. Like, they haven't, you know, fought for justice or for peace. And why should we vote for them if they didn't come to help innocent people around the world who are dying?
It's all about people power. It's all about people power. We need to carry on protesting. We need to carry on marching. I think it will have an impact. It's having an impact.
I think we've seen that with the Galloway making it to the parliament, that Palestine became a stable in UK politics now. And I think the Labour, knowing that they're going into elections soon, they should take note of that and definitely change their position from Palestine ceasefire.
Well, let's get some thoughts on those developments within the moments we have left on this edition of Gaza Under Attack. Alex Ackerman and Dr. Zakaria Abbas are still with us. And I wanted to bring you back in here, Dr. Abbas, because, you know, we've seen the demonstrations taking place demanding respective governments do more to put pressure on Tel Aviv. Where you are there also Quds demonstrations expected at this time? I'd like to get that global perspective.
We are a land of India, as you know, Mahatma Gandhiji, who fought against the British invaders. You know, we are the ones who gain freedom through resistance. So we are the people who can relate to what's happening. But unfortunately, the global politics, the stand of India has been very neutral, and it is also not very satisfactory because of their multilateral connections. But yes, we do have people protesting. We have indoor events, and on social media, as you know, Indian citizens are very much active. And I'm very happy to let you know that India, being a multicultural society, we have Hindus, Christians, Muslims, and different religions. You know, a lot of our friends, not necessarily being Muslims, they've got to know the truth about Palestine. And that is what has happened this time. You know, last few decades, like you said, Iran has been doing Al-Quds Day. I have been participating as a child, but the world thought it was just a political movement. But today, every country is coming out on roads. So Iran has proved its stand that what they started decades back, today, every country is following its footsteps. And the voices are uniting. It's no more about a Muslim issue. It is a global issue. And that is something very, welcoming. And India's stand is neutral. It can be better, but definitely we are with the people of Palestine.
Indeed, Alex, and we see that the individuals who have been mobilizing here are making a difference. What do you make of this no ceasefire, no vote movement in terms of what it could do for politics with an election expected this year?
I mean, what is interesting as well is that this year we will have election in the UK as well as in the US. And with 6 months going down the line and the evidence of what is happening, of the negotiations with no tangible results, people are still destroyed in Gaza. And even now, the aid workers, they prevented the lorries to come into Gaza, but now even the aid worker will venture to try to help sick, you know, people who are deprived of everything. The Israeli army is still targeting them because obviously they knew that this convoy is going for food, to distribute food to the populations who are obviously hungry and deprived and everything. But now, I think with the elections coming up, maybe things will change because from experience, if you look at in America, whenever we have Democrats in power, we tend to have more crises across the globe, wars across the globe. And America being the protector of Israel, for the last 6 months, if they are allies, but what have they done to make sure that things can change on the ground in Gaza? And nothing has really moved on. So hopefully the elections will be maybe what will bring the results and the changes which will be coming from the people after the elections will hopefully bring this war to an end and also move on to Palestinians having their own state to ensure
indeed,
that...
Indeed, because it's not just
exactly,
now, right?
Exactly. It's not just now. You're looking at a longer-term issue because, I mean, Palestine allowed the territory to be divided into two, to have two states. But how on earth, for the last 60, 70 years, Palestinians don't still have their own state?
Indeed. And I think we can both agree that that's been quite deliberate. Dr. Abbas, I touched on the fact earlier that, you know, as a man of medicine, where your first oath is do no harm, to be watching what's gone down in real time and recognizing that it's either munitions or malnutrition that may well kill you in Gaza. What are your reflections about where we are here? About a minute and a half or so, sir.
You know, our spirits are shattered, our hearts are broken. As a doctor, when we see so many doctors being killed, you know, we have hundreds of humanitarian workers, doctors killed in service. And, you know, when a hospital has a capacity of taking care of 100 patients, they're taking care of 1,000 patients in a day. You know, first of all, my heart goes out to all the martyrs, the doctors who have lost their lives, and immense respect for them and their families. And like I said, from a medical perspective, there are nearly 500,000 people who were at risk of famine by May. And today, if you say that Israel invaded Gaza because of Hamas, that's the biggest lie. If that was the reason, why are they cutting the humanitarian aid? There are thousands of trucks which are stuck at the border, and there are thousands of, you know, there are a lot of organizations who want to reach out to Gaza, but it's just not happening. Today, Israel wants to kill the population, exactly like how Adolf Hitler did. You know, it's just ironical where when you feel the pain, you need to feel the pain of others, but it's completely the opposite. And as a doctor, I stand here helpless. And all I can say is I'm praying for them. And we still have hopes. This war against Gaza has united hearts. This is an era where we need to unite hearts to save mankind. And that's the only message I want to give on this platform.
Indeed. Some meaningful words there, of course, our guest. Always knowing that this is such a very difficult conversation for us to have, but yet here we are, and unfortunately that does it for us for today. Alex Ackerman and Dr. Zakaria Abbas were a very special guest, and our thanks to them and to you for being with us. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaam alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to your program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program we talk about the verses of the Holy Quran that talk about humanity and human being and different functions, different aspects and dimensions of a human being. And in the previous episode we ended up talking about intellect, and we were reading some of the hadith related to the verses of the Holy Quran. We ended up talking about the relationship between intellect and haya, sense of shame and embarrassment. And we said there is a certain level of haya that is exclusively for human beings. And we said that this is according to the hadith that we read in the previous episode. It shows that that level of haya, if a person doesn't have it, that makes him, that excludes him from the community of mankind. And yes, apparently he is a human being, but in essence he's not included in the addressees of the divine message. So today and in this episode we have a very beautiful hadith from Imam Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam that explains the story when Jibreel came to the Prophet with a message. And Ali alayhi salam, قال هبت جبرائيل عليه السلام. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, Jibreel came down to the Prophet, to the Prophet Adam alayhi salam, ala Adam alayhi salam. فقال يا آدم. Jibreel said, O Adam, إني أمرت أن أخيرك. And we know these things Imam Ali narrates from the Prophet. This is all the things, the teachings that the Prophet had taught Imam Ali as the interpretation of the verses of the Holy Quran. There are different, multiple hadith that the Imam says there was no verse revealed to the Prophet until I wouldn't leave the Prophet until I have asked him all the related stories and sha'n al-nuzul, why the occasion of the revelation and all the things that he had. So he had a one large book of the interpretation of the verses of the Holy Quran directly from the Prophet. So one of maybe this, maybe for sure we know this is from the teachings of the Prophet. So says فَقَالَ يَا Adam, Jibreel told Adam, O Adam, إِنِّي أُمِرْتُ أَنْ أُخَيَّرَكَ وَاحِدَةً مِنْ ثَلَاثٍ. I have been commanded, obviously by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to make you choose between three options, to take one option, to select one thing from among three options. أُخَيِّرَكَ وَاحِدَةً مِنْ ثَلَاثٍ. You have the right to choose one. فَاخْتَرْهَا, select it, وَدَعْ إِثْنَتَيْنِ, and leave the other two. فَقَالَ لَهُ آدَمُ, then Prophet Adam said, يَا جَبْرَئِيلُ وَمَا الثَّلَاثُ, so what are the three options? فَقَالَ الْعَقْلُ وَالْحَيَاءُ وَالدِّينُ. Jibreel said, these three are these: intellect, sense of shame, and religion. Which one do you like? You can only take one. فَقَالَ لَهُ آدَمُ, Adam said, يَا جَبْرَئِيلُ, فَقَالَ آدَمُ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ إِنِّي قَدْ اخْتَرْتُ الْعَقْلَ, I have selected the intellect. فَقَالَ جَبْرَئِيلُ لِلْحَيَاءُ وَالدِّينُ, then Jibreel told to Haya and Deen, this could be metaphorical, this could be real, we don't actually know how Haya and Deen could be addressed and talked to. This could be metaphorical, this could be real, depending on the reality of the situation, which is far from our understanding. So Jibreel said to them, انصرفوا ودعوا, okay, you can go, leave the intellect alone. فقال يا جبرائيل إنا أمرنا أن نكون مع العقل حيث كان. They said, O Jibreel, we have been commanded by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to be with intellect wherever it is. This is very beautiful. This is very beautiful. We will have a break. We come back. We should cover this part with more focus.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In the first segment, we were reading this beautiful hadith. The story goes like this, that Jibreel came to Adam alayhi salam and said, you have to choose one from the three options, and the options were intellect, religion, and a sense of shame, haya. And Adam alayhi salam chose intellect, and Jibreel told to the other two, you can go now, and they said, no. We have been commanded and nakuna ma'ala, to be with intellect wherever, to accompany intellect wherever it is. Haythakan. Qal fasha'nakuma wa'araj. Jibreel said, as you wish, as you've been commanded, carry it out. So it shows that if a person has intellect, he has to have two other things as well. One is religion, the other is sense of shame. Now, this religion could be having the sense of a general way of life, because we know that deen in Arabic means a lifestyle, a way of living. And in that general interpretation, deen here means consistency in lifestyle, to have principles for one's life. But then, because we have other ahadith that talks about the relationship between true aql, true rationality, and true religion, this could also have the meaning of having specifically the religion, divine, correct religion, which is the religion of fitrah, the religion of Islam. So now we don't want to talk about the reconcilability between reason and religion, reason and revelation. We want to talk about the inherent relationship or the necessary relationship between intellect and sense of shame, according to this verse, Al-Haya, which again, with this story that Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam tells from Prophet Adam alayhi salam, shows that this is very one very important component in human soul, sense of shame. Now, as I said, it's not always a good haya. Sometimes haya and sense of shame, feeling embarrassed, is bad. It's not correct. When, for example, when a person needs to defend himself, there is no haya there. When a person needs to learn something, some people, they say, okay, I feel embarrassed to sit in this class to ask that question. There's a beautiful hadith from Imam Amir al-Mu'minin as-Salam. He says, if a person does not dare, does not stand up with the difficulty of learning for 1 hour, he will remain in the humility of ignorance for the rest of his life. If a person does not accept dhullu sa'at al-ta'allum, 1 hour of learning, yes, it has some humility. But if you don't accept that dhul, that humility, you should accept a long life of humiliation of ignorance. Which one is better? So you ask one question. So there is no embarrassment in asking. There is no embarrassment in learning. There is no embarrassment in defending the truth. There is no embarrassment in defending yourself when you think you have the right. But yes, there is an embarrassment when you do something wrong and you have to repent for that. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us know which situation is exactly the situation for being embarrassed, which situation is the exact situation for not being embarrassed. Thank you very much for listening. Until next episode, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
In the United States, the special counsel Jack Smith has slammed the idea that Donald Trump could claim classified documents as his personal records. Accepting such an argument would be pure fiction, the special counsel has argued. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Special Counsel Jack Smith, responding on Tuesday 2nd of April to the judge overseeing former President Donald Trump's classified documents case, urged her to reverse course on entertaining the idea that Trump had any personal ownership over the classified materials that he has been charged with unlawfully possessing. In a late-night court filing replying to an order last month from Judge Eileen Cannon requesting proposed jury instructions that appear to accept at face value what legal experts have argued is one of Trump's most fringe defenses, that the former president had unchecked ability to claim all classified records as his personal property, Jack Smith argued that accepting such an argument would not only be pure fiction, but meritless and fatally undermined by all the evidence gathered by the government as part of their case. Among that evidence, according to Smith, are interviews with Donald Trump's own Presidential Records Act representatives and numerous high-ranking officials from the White House, none of whom had heard Trump say that he was designating records as personal. To the contrary, every witness who was asked this question had never heard such a thing, Jack Smith's office said. Smith's office repeatedly urged Judge Eileen Cannon that if she continued to entertain such an interpretation of the Presidential Records Act, she must inform the parties of that decision well in advance of trial, suggesting they'd seek relief from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which has already overturned her rulings twice in this case. The government must have the opportunity to consider appellate review well before jeopardy attaches, the court filing said. Trump last year pleaded not guilty to all charges relating to his handling of classified materials after leaving the White House, after prosecutors said he repeatedly refused to return hundreds of documents containing classified information ranging from U.S. nuclear secrets to America's defense capabilities. The former president has denounced the probe as a political witch hunt. In their court filing, the special counsel's office cited the 11th Circuit's previous opinion that they argued should make clear to Judge Cannon that Donald Trump had no personal interest over the documents seized in the FBI's 2022 search of Mar-a-Lago State. Plaintiff does not have a possessory interest in the documents at issue, so he does not suffer a cognizable harm if the United States reviews documents he neither owns nor has a personal interest in, the court filing said. As part of the filing, Smith's office also revealed a series of communications between Trump's team and the president of the conservative group Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton, which they argued showed his acknowledgement as early as February of 2022 that the classified records at issue in this case were presidential rather than personal. According to the court filing, even as Tom Fitton was advising an unnamed Trump employee that the records Trump possessed at Mar-a-Lago should have been characterized as personal, another employee urged Donald Trump to reject such an argument and explain to him why. Nevertheless, on 10th of February 2022, Trump released a statement claiming in part, "I've been told I was under no obligation to give the material based on various legal rulings that have been made over the years," the court filing said. Before this time, the second employee had never heard this theory from Donald Trump. No other witness recalled Trump espousing this theory until after the Judicial Watch president conveyed it to him in February of 2022. CBS News has also covered this story and tells us more. Special Counsel Jack Smith urged a federal judge to keep a presidential record-keeping law out of instructions that would be provided to the jury in the classified documents case against former President Donald Trump, according to court documents filed by Jack Smith's team late on Tuesday, 2nd of April. Prosecutors warned that including the law in the instructions risked jeopardizing the proceedings and signaled they would appeal the judge's decision if she ruled against them. Last month, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, who is overseeing the case in Florida, asked Jack Smith and Trump's legal teams to file jury instructions based on two hypothetical scenarios. In one, the president has the authority under the Presidential Records Act to categorize any records as personal. Under this scenario, Judge Cannon wrote that neither a court nor a jury would have the ability to review the decision, a finding that could nullify much of the special counsel's case against Donald Trump. In the other, the jury would be able to examine a record that had been retained by a former president and make a finding that it was either personal or presidential under the Presidential Records Act. Under this scenario, it is possible that jurors could find that some official documents were mishandled. Federal prosecutors rejected both proposals and wrote on Tuesday, 2nd of April, that the Presidential Records Act, a 1978 law that manages the maintenance of White House documents produced during each presidency, should not play any role at trial at all, arguing that Donald Trump's alleged mishandling of classified records occurred after his presidency had ended. Donald Trump and Jack Smith filed separate proposals for jury instructions in the case on Tuesday, 2nd of April, although a trial date has yet to be set. Prosecutors said on Tuesday that both of Judge Cannon's hypothetical scenarios rest on an unstated and fundamentally flawed legal premise. Any jury instructions that include the Presidential Records Act risk distorting the trial, they said. Instead, the special counsel suggested jurors should only have to determine three elements of the case that amount to whether Donald Trump willfully retained national defense information without the authorization of the federal government. Jack Smith's team requested that if the judge opts to include language concerning the Presidential Records Act, she affords them ample time to appeal the matter to higher courts ahead of trial. The former president's legal team took the opposite view, writing that Judge Cannon correctly stated the law when she suggested the jury instruction that would have granted Trump much broader power under the Presidential Records Act. If the case is presented to a jury, which it should not be, the jury would be forced to resolve factual issues relating to not only the Presidential Records Act categorizations, but also documents' alleged classification status, Trump's defense team argued. In their own proposed jury instructions, Trump's legal team suggested that Judge Cannon tell the jurors that Trump was authorized to access the classified records during his presidency, and that certain precedents allow for former presidents to access certain documents. The special counsel charged Donald Trump in a 40-count indictment that includes 32 alleged violations of a national security law that makes it illegal to mishandle national defense information. Trump is also accused of engaging in an obstruction scheme as part of an alleged effort to thwart several investigators as they probed his retention of documents with classified markings.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and youth, guided by the wisdom of the Holy Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, who is a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed some light on this important subject. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Salma. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So we've been discussing in the past few episodes about a certain question. A lot of the listeners must know it by now, where a parent is wants to know what to expect from their teenage son and how to train for that so as to not be too late. And you gave some very important points, you know, truthfulness, trustworthiness, teaching them to be grateful, and instilling self-restraint and control. And last of all, you mentioned about instilling focus, and so that they are not so they shouldn't lose concentration so easily. And you gave some ways to do that as well. Do you want to say more about that?
No, I guess I'll go to another point, and that is determination.
Okay.
Child should be determined. Determination is that will to do something, to gain something from it, to gain to achieve something.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a young age, we should set goals for them. For example, if we are doing something, what is our goal? You know, like if we are reading, our goal is to understand the story. Once we've understood the story, our goal should be probably writing and explaining about the story.
Mm.
If that is there accomplished, then our goal is to follow the good points of the story.
Yeah.
So, in any way, if you go and see, setting goals is, nobody does things just like that. Even if the people don't have a religion, they would never waste the time doing things that, you know, without determination. Some people, of course, but if they set their goals, but if they don't set their goals, it's just be haywire their life. So
you need to have like a path of, you know, goal,
a path,
a focus.
And then a focus on it. That's why we talked about focus first, a determination that lead you to your goal. Something that you don't lose your hope. Like, for example, we should learn, actually, a scholar said this, it's quite funny, but we should learn determination from Shaitan. He never loses hope to misguide.
Yeah.
How strong he is to misguide, and he will never lose, even a pious person, he will feel, no, this can be, he or she can be still misguided. So, if you go and see the prophets, 1,24,000 prophets, out of them, the ulul azm, means that irada, that determination, were five. Mm-hmm. This is Ibrahim, Nuh, Musa, Isa, and the Holy Prophet. They were the ones who faced so many difficulties but didn't lose hope.
Yeah.
They moved around and they accomplished their tasks. So whatever we do, like, you know, in life, for example, even if it be playing a simple game when they're small, then you should tell them our goal is to learn this from this.
Yeah.
Or when they grow up, studying, what is the goal behind the studying? Maybe the first thing would be maybe passing just with good marks. But then what is in the long run what? Then you should speak to them about the reality. So that when they grow up, they're able to realize themselves without you telling them what's your goal.
Yeah.
They would be able to choose and select their own interesting subject that they would benefit, you know, the people.
Definitely.
The society.
And just knowing that, you know, they've come here for a reason, I think this is one of the main kind of ways to tell the people that it's not possible for this world to just come just like that, and we've just come here just like
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
Without any goal, it makes no sense at all.
That's right.
So we're just going to take a short break and we'll be back soon.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing about how to instill some very important characteristics in our children so as to, you know, help them grow as better youth. And we have been discussing about instilling determination and will, you know, showing them how to set goals, showing them that this world has a purpose and everything in their life should have a purpose.
That's right.
Yeah, so do you want to expand
on that? That's beautiful. That we should not forget to tell them that why we came in this world, there's a purpose behind it. And then we should be determined to go along and fulfill that purpose. And not just think that, you know, that all these things that are required from us, if the, for example, Sharia, are just like that for any, for to please God.
Yeah.
To please God, why? Allah gets pleased, He needs that pleasure? No. It's just for our own growth, our own success, our own pleasure, our own perfection. So, when determination has been found in the person of everything, then he will come to know the purpose of life.
True.
And he will live in a very beautiful way. So, teenager, when that teenager is at that age that he gets the most pleasure out of good things. So, this is one of the best things to realize, to get the knowledge, to get that, you know, that understanding of why we came. And he will derive the most pleasure out of obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
True.
And we want that to happen, right, for all the teenagers. So, the parents should, from first, set up these kind of goals in any activity that they're doing and remind them gently and politely, and therefore the child will grow up to realize that even everything that he sets up, he is there even in this life for a particular purpose, and he has to be determined to achieve that goal. And the goal is nothing but the closeness to Allah, qurbatan ilallah. So that comes later on. You know, when the teenager just realizes that everything has a goal, that motivation even comes about. And then when he realizes that his religion also has a divine goal for him, then he will take utmost pleasure in that too.
Very true. And especially right now, the youth, they're so goal-driven with, but unfortunately, because they're not being guided towards the correct goals, they are having very, you know, idealistic, materialistic kind of goals, that very materialistic, like worldly. So I feel like at this moment, to kind of you know, nudge them towards the correct path, toward the correct goals, because they have so much potential, they can, like, you know, reach such great heights. So
that's right.
At times I feel like, just, you know,
like if you go and see the history of our scholars, they were very young when they were so determined, and like at the age of tender age of 12 they were studying like religious hawza. We think that hawza is something, it's so difficult, it requires so much determination, sometimes you lose hope, you know, that you can ever grasp those kind of, you know, concepts.
Even the martyrs, like, they at such a young age, they would still feel like they want to go and, you know, fight for what's right.
Despite the fact that they didn't have the strength also.
Yeah.
But they had such determination that they were not even refused to, and then they gave up their lives, and they remembered. Like, if you go and see a young martyr of 12-year-old Shahid Fahmide, how determined he was, that Imam Khomeini says, he is our rahbar, he is our leader. Because he showed that he wanted to save the lives, and he went under the tank and he saved so many other lives.
Very true. So we're just going to take a short break and we'll be back soon.
Ya muqri al-khayrat, ya muqri al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, a righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise.
يا مقي الخيرات يا مقي الخيرات.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, and we have been discussing about a very important characteristic to instill in our children, which is our determination and will. And you know, you said that it's for the child's own benefit and growth, and we have to try and kind of show them how to set goals, how to, you know, what path to look forward to and what things to be determined in, so that they can actually succeed in life and grow. So do you want to add more onto this, or do you have another point?
Yes, I have another point to discuss, and that is from a young age, avoid idle talk.
Mm-hmm.
See what's going in the family. If, for example, if the mother is smart enough, she won't idly talk to even the father.
Yeah.
Whenever she talks, there's something useful she's saying. There's a hadith that says that if you talk, the moment, if you're silent, you keep on getting the reward.
Yeah.
The moment you talk, you either get good reward or you get, like for example, you get a punishment. Or for example, evil is recorded in your book of deeds.
Yeah.
So it's either sawab or guna. this, you know, a sin or a good deed. So talking useful things is a good deed. You don't have to keep on talking, and it makes sense that if you, it doesn't mean that you have to keep on talking. Okay, for a child, you have to keep on, you know, like, kind of, you have to talk more. When they're cranky, you have to talk to them. When they don't want to sleep, you have to talk to them. When they want to play, you have to talk to them. So it's a lot of talking for the parents.
Yeah.
And you get tired. But the thing is, this will help in the long run. Everything, make sure that a parent talks should be useful. That should be in the upper list of our talking, you know, like a agenda. Like whatever we talk, make sure it's useful. Even at home, we set an example subconsciously when you're talking. That, oh, for example, if you're talking about people, it's like doing ghibat, number one. Number two, it's idle talk. Or we're talking just about, for example, a TV program. It doesn't need to be even, you know, like discussed so much
but,
about.
But they say at times that it's good to just have a bonding time where you're just joking around and all, because when everything seems too serious, then the friends, children feel like, oh, we'll go outside.
No. That seriousness, I don't mean serious.
Yeah.
I mean talk for a purpose.
Mm.
So you know that this is bonding time. So you joke, you laugh. But make sure that you don't talk idle talk. Okay? And when it's time to, for example, even if you talk about, for example, something that will make a child laugh, know that the jokes shouldn't be like vulgar jokes.
Mm.
They shouldn't be jokes that have no meaning. Even if Amali used to joke, you know, and the whole prophet used to joke, they have so many jokes recorded, and good ones, intelligent jokes that made them laugh, you know. So it's important, to have this light humor, everything. But
has to be
something
some
that is doesn't have a purpose is no use to, you know, to have a talk about. So anything, for example, even if it's lighthearted, the newspaper, what we read, what we learned, you know, without being serious, you know, like watching together something and having a conversation about what we learned from it, it's good to even be in the midst. You can even crack a joke or something, but make sure that,
like, we don't have to be in both extremes.
Purpose is not lost.
Yeah.
The purpose of gaining something from the talk is not lost.
Definitely.
So even if it's like gaining a good relationship with a child, and you know that this is your purpose, so you have to talk a lot. What did you do? Where did you go? All these things are very much, you know, like intricate. So still they should be done.
Very true, very true. Inshallah that we all refrain from idle talk. I think it's sometimes we get carried away when we're having like normal discussions or talks, you know, with our families, with our friends, inshallah. So thank you so much for your valuable time, and we hope to see you in the next episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening. And this was IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on Charter Pungi. If you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI, which is Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can also email us on englishradio@irib.ir. God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Saint of the soil, from the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me the sound of the rain, from the battle and the victory.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iranians in the southern city of Isfahan hold a funeral for a senior IRGC commander killed in an Israeli attack on the country's embassy building.